Hello everyone out there, welcome to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. That was a little bit of a different intro than usual. That's what happens when you leave your intro music at home. That was a great band though. I was introduced to them by my roommate a long time ago. They are called the Rural Alberta Advantage, and that was the song The Deathbridge and Lethbridge from their album Hometowns. Kick-ass. My name is Carl Ozhovsky, and I am your host for today. Today we have a really great show lined up. I'm super excited to be presenting this stuff to you today, and I hope you'll be excited as I am. Today on the program, we are going to have Matt Ellerbeck on the show, and if you don't know Matt Ellerbeck, you're going to know him very soon. Matt Ellerbeck is a scorpion conservationist. He's a conservation educator and an arachnoculturist who's going to talk to us today about the much maligned, much misunderstood scorpion. Obviously, there's lots of different kinds of scorpions, and we're going to maybe get into some of the different species of scorpions and what they're like and that sort of thing. But we're also going to talk about how scorpions get exploited and how scorpions are endangered by human contact. You know, they're one of those, they're not a cute and fuzzy animal by any means, but they are worth looking into for their own right. He contacted us a couple weeks ago and wanted to be on the program, and as soon as I checked out his website, I knew that that it had to be done. He's put a lot of work into it, and he's got many, many, many interesting things to say about it. So we'll be talking with Matt Ellerbeck at about the quarter after point, but I've got a little bit of news, and the first bit of news is coming to us from CBC, and this is sort of the ongoing saga of Lucy the Elephant. The headline is, "No more examinations for Lucy the Elephant, city says." Officials at the Edmonton Valley Zoo will not bring in more veterinarians to examine Lucy, their Asian elephant, retired game show host and animal activist Bob Barker was told Thursday afternoon. Quote, "The meeting went badly," Barker told reporters after speaking privately with city and zoo officials. "The zoo is absolutely implacable. They won't consider even saying that when Lucy is feeling well, that we can take her to the sanctuary." At a news conference earlier in the day, Barker called for the zoo to bring in more experts to look at Lucy to determine if she can be moved to an animal sanctuary in California run by the Performing Animals Welfare Society, or PAWS. Quote, "We would like to have a panel of veterinarians examine Lucy and see how quickly she could be ready to travel if she couldn't travel right now," Barker told reporters at the news conference. Earlier this week, city officials said the 34-year-old elephant would not be moved following an examination by American veterinarian James Austerius. Austerius told the city a move could kill Lucy after discovering her nose and trunk were so swollen it was forcing her to breathe through her mouth. Despite Barker's pleas, the city's decision stands, Edmonton Community Services General Manager Linda Cochran said. Quote, "We're not about to be browbeaten by one sanctuary and a body of people that say she has to move. We don't believe that it's in Lucy's best interest to have her re-examined by a vet that comes with a point of view that says she needs to move, so we're not going to put Lucy through that. And we're not going to have her checked out for something we already know." Barker vowed the campaign to move Lucy will continue, but there was word Thursday that the battle could be moving to the courts. Barker said animal rights group People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals has retained lawyer Clayton Ruby, a well-known Toronto lawyer, to represent them. While Ruby confirmed to the Edmonton Journal he had been retained to look at legal options to get her moved, he would not say who his client was. And the next story, don't usually read stories from blogs, but I found this to be a bit of an interesting story that I feel like I haven't really heard too much about and was glad to find it. So this is coming to us from the website blogs.telegraph.co.uk. It's by Peter Wedderburn, and it was posted on September 18th. The headline is, "China Unveils First Ever Animal Cruelty Legislation." Whatever about its reputation on human rights, China has been well known for paying scant attention to issues affecting the welfare of animals. The most stark examples have included live dogs and cats crammed into tiny cages for sale as meat in markets, live cattle and goats being fed to zoo animals for public entertainment, and dogs being skinned alive for fur production. It seems that China is moving slowly with the times. Today, its first ever animal cruelty laws are being unveiled. The legislation, which has been drawn up in consultation with the RSPCA, will include provisions to both protect pets and cover how farm animals should be raised, transported, and slaughtered. It will also deliver protection for captive wildlife and laboratory animals. The laws address deliberate cruelty and several of the most serious issues, such as those listed above, that have concerned the international animal welfare community for many years. It will be the first time in China's history that the state is sending a clear message to every citizen: the way we treat animals matters. Currently in China, only endangered species are protected, and there is no penalty for abusing or killing other animals. Over the last few years, reports have increased of deliberate animal cruelty, and several high-profile incidents have attracted widespread public condemnation and intense media coverage within China. Earlier this year, Peter writes, I blogged about the inhumane methods used in the large-scale killing of around 30,000 dogs following rabies outbreaks in China, which attracted not only international but also domestic criticism. Of course, there are many hurdles to cross, including the precise details of the final legislation and the practical aspects of enforcing the law, but today does mark a significant step forward for non-human sentient beings in China. And once again, that's from Peter Wedderburn on blogs.telegraph.co.uk. Do check it out. The final story today coming to us from CBC News, and it's a really... When I see things like this, I'm shocked at the waste and the sort of and the sadness of this kind of thing. The headline is Belgian farmers dump milk in massive protest. Milk dumped on roads and farmland to protest drastically lower prices. European milk farmers have dumped 3 million liters of fresh milk onto pastures and roads in a massive organized protest against lower dairy prices. In Belgium, farmers spread milk across roads near the southern town of Cigny. Elsewhere, about 300 tractors dragged milk containers through plowed fields in southern Belgium, dumping a day's worth of milk production in that region. Farmers spray milk on a field in Cigny, Belgium on Wednesday to protest slumping dairy prices. Quote, it is a scandal to dump this, but we have to realize what the situation is, said Belgian farm leader Erwin Schopges. We need a farm revolt. Milk farmers say world prices have gone so low that they had to sell at half the production cost, leaving more farmers unable to pay their bills. Prices have fallen 40% since the spring, and European dairy farmers are set to lose the equivalent of $14 billion this year, unless the situation is remedied. On Tuesday, farmers closed Belgian border crossings to the Netherlands and to Germany to push demands for higher prices. Most EU nations want to shore up milk prices, but they disagree on how to do that. The EU head office opposes the lowering of quotas, but the quotas are scheduled to end in 2015. Since the recovery from the Second World War, agriculture is one of the most shielded sectors of the European economy, as governments have sought to end hunger and rationing by paying farmers to increase food production. But despite decades of being largely exempt from free market forces, farmers have not been protected by governments from the global financial crisis that caused demand to crash. Unfortunately for the cows that produce the milk, all of the potential pain and suffering that went into that is now being dumped on the roads and on the fields. And it's a sad, sad situation, it sounds like, from all accounts, but especially because this is Animal Voices, I am especially thinking about the cows that put very, very serious effort and pain and suffering into producing that milk. To see it dumped like that is a very sad situation. You're listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. Today we are going to be speaking with Matt Ellerbeck. He is a scorpion conservationist and a conservation educator and an arachnoculturist. And he's going to be talking to us today about scorpions. We're going to take a short musical break. Before we do that, just want to remind everybody that if you want to get a hold of us, you can do that in a few different ways. You can check us out on Facebook, facebook.com, use the little searchy tool there, type in Animal Voices, you should be able to find us, no problem. If you want to email us, you can do that, animalvoices@gmail.com. We don't always reply to emails right away because we are a volunteer run ship here, but we will get back to you as soon as possible, and we welcome any critiques, love letters, show suggestions, PayPal donations, what have you. And also you can check out, if you want to have a reason to donate to us, you can check out our website, www.animalvoices.ca, where this show and over almost 300 of our other shows are archived, all for free, all available for instant download. So please do check us out online and drop us a line and let us know what you think. We're going to take a short musical break. You're listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. Hello everyone, and welcome back to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. And now we're turning to the crux of the program. Today we're speaking with Matt Allerbeck about scorpions, and I'm really happy to have him on the show. Matt is a scorpion conservationist, a conservation educator, and an arachnoculturist. He's given numerous educational presentations on animal conservation throughout the Kingston, Ontario area. Some highlights include presentations for the Kingston Field Naturalists, the Cataraqui Region Conservation Authority, St. Lawrence Islands National Park, and the environmental education students at Queen's University. He's also written several articles on scorpions, which have been published in numerous environmental and conservation-related publications. Matt has also frequently appeared in the local media to help get the message of scorpion conservation out to the public. Appearances have included local TV shows, news programs, radio interviews, and newspaper articles. He is also a member of Creatures 101, a group that specializes in giving both educational and informative presentations on animal conservation. Matt's role in the presentation is to educate people on scorpions and their conservation. Matt, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Not a problem. Matt, how did you get into scorpions? what is your scorpion story? They're not a, as you talk about on your website, they're not really an animal that would necessarily be people's first choice to approach.
No, exactly. And I think that's the appeal for me. I've always loved animals ever since I was a little kid. I remember being a child and being fascinated by, you know, snakes and snapping turtles and things that were around here. And as I got older, the first experiences I had with scorpions, or the first knowledge I had of them, had come from movies. I had just seen them and I thought, that's a really fascinating sort of bizarre animal, which I've always been into. Like, don't get me wrong, I love all animals, but sure, there's something appealing to me about the misunderstood ones, because even when I go out and do presentations, or I was doing a fundraiser, for instance, for our local Humane Society, and you would expect that the people that would go there would, you know, obviously like animals. And then you get people that come up
actually
to you. Yeah, oh, well, that's a good point as well.
It's funny that you mention that, because I used to volunteer at the Humane Society, and I worked alongside many wonderful people, but they don't necessarily love all animals.
Well, that's the thing. You have people come up to you and say, oh, I love animals, but then they're very choosy about the ones they like, you know, the appealing ones. And then, you know, what I do with scorpions, they're like, oh, I hate scorpions, or snakes, or things like that. So when people say they love animals, it doesn't necessarily mean they like all of them. And some people even go as far as, like, scorpions aren't animals, they're just bugs. And I'm
right.
Like, well, you know, insects and arachnids are animals. Well, so, although I love all animals, I've always had a soft spot for sort of the misunderstood creatures, and it's been a passion of mine to sort of champion them and advocate for them, so.
And so did you have an encounter with a scorpion somewhere along the way that sort of got you interested, or was it sort of, you know, you read about them in books, or?
No, it just kind of, when I would see them on TV and documentaries and movies, and it just kind of got me interested, just seeing the animal, and just, they were sort of bizarre and unique. And then what had happened was, in Kingston, for the first few years when I was doing conservation education, I had focused on snakes and turtles, because that's what's around here.
Right.
And then at the end of 2008, I had sort of done all of my planned activities, and I was getting ready to plan more presentations and things, and that's when I sort of got involved with Creatures 101. So I had other members of that group willing to talk about snakes and amphibians, turtles, which gave me the freedom to then talk about something different. And then right around that time, I had seen scorpions. There was a clip of one in a movie, and there were two of them in an ashtray, and then someone was putting, you know, their cigarettes out in it, and I thought, that's awful that these animals are just being used as a prop in some terrible movie. And that's when I thought, you know, and I was seeing around town people with scorpion necklaces and keychains,
right.
And I thought, you know, these animals are really exploited, and this would give me a really good opportunity to talk about something, you know, that it has the same parallels as snakes, like misunderstood,
right.
And a lot of people don't like them, so I thought, this is what I'm going to do, and then I've just delved right into it, and it's something I've really been enjoying.
I think maybe if I could play devil's advocate here, you know, it sounds like you've heard a lot of sort of, why should I care about scorpions? You know,
yeah,
like,
no.
they seem like a very sort of scary animal on the outside. They're, you know, they've got a hard shelled kind of body and crab like kind of pincers and a stinger. And they seem scary. You know, they seem a little bit scary. And I think you've probably faced this question a lot. Why should I care about scorpions? Why do scorpions need to be conserved?
Well, the first part is, when answering that, is you have to kind of convince people that they're not as scary as they think they are. They're not going to have any interest in protecting them. So the first thing I tell people is that scorpions are actually very shy and secretive creatures. They're not an animal that looks for confrontation. They spend up to 97% of their life under covers that might be a burrow or under rocks or debris. So this is a very shy, secretive animal that really only comes out to mate or to look for food. So they really don't want to be bothered. And when people are having confrontations with scorpions or they get stung, it usually happens when someone's either intentionally handling them. And I would say, you know, if I grabbed a chipmunk off a tree, it would certainly bite and scratch me because that animal is just scared. That's its way of telling me to leave it alone.
Right.
Well, the scorpion is no different. If you pick up a wild animal, what do you expect? But no one has that sort of fear of chipmunks or things. It's all our perception. So that's one of the things I tell people. And secondly, if someone does step on a scorpion or picks one up and they get stung, a lot of times the scorpion will not even inject any venom. They need their venom as a way to quickly kill their prey. Scorpions live in areas like deserts where prey might not always be abundant and things like that. So when they do seize their prey, injecting venom is a very efficient way to immobilize them that they can eat. So if they waste all their venom, it could take several days for them to restock the supply. So in defensive stings, they may inject very little venom or none at all. And that's proof that if these animals were, you know, as evil and aggressive as people thought, they would certainly use their chemical weapons against us, but they know that we're not their prey, so they often won't use it at all. And the other thing is, like I said before, if you just leave them alone, you'll never ever have a confrontation with one. I mean, the world is becoming a smaller place, people travel more, so, I mean, if you're going to the prairie provinces where they have a species of scorpion, or the southern U.S. or Mexico and things like that, I would just, you know, common sense will go a long way, I think, to alleviate confrontations between people and wildlife.
And so there are some species of scorpion in Canada? Or
yes,
just
we have species in southern Saskatchewan, BC, and Alberta, the northern scorpion.
And obviously we're talking about scorpions as a whole here, but there are obviously many, many different kinds of species of scorpion.
Yeah.
On your website, you start right away by saying, to the average person, scorpions appear to be bizarre, unusual, and downright frightening creatures. However, beyond an almost alien and formidable appearance, there is a fascinating and impressive creature. I remember, a little story from when I was doing my undergrad. I had a professor who taught a class on sort of animal-human relations, and she talked about there's probably good biological reasons why we're afraid of snakes or why we're afraid of scorpions or that sort of thing. Like, that the reaction that we have to animals like that is not necessarily entirely cultural. Do you think that that's the case? Do you think that it's an entirely cultural response? Do you think there's something to a sort of more visceral kind of, almost like an evolutionary, that looks like something I want to stay away from response?
That's a hard question to answer, and I get asked that a lot. I think, in my opinion, not necessarily, because even if you look at it culturally, people that I meet around here when I go to do shows are just terrified of scorpions. I was at a show and a woman was there. There was other exhibitors, so she didn't necessarily know there was going to be scorpions.
Mm-hmm.
And when she seen them, she just started yelling and walked the other way. And I was just thinking, here's a woman who's probably never, ever had an experience with a scorpion or ever had a bad, you know, encounter with one, while people I've talked to, tourists and things from other parts of the world where there are scorpions and venomous ones, that, you know, they say if they see them, they'll stay away from them. They give them the respect and space they deserve, but they don't have those same reactions. And I think a lot of these really bad, strong reactions against some of these animals is just, I think a lot of it has to do with sensationalism from the media and movies, where they're always portrayed as these killers falling on people in temples and, you know, if someone gets stung, they die immediately, when that's not the case. I mean, there's over 100 species of scorpion across North America, and there hasn't been a death from any scorpion in North America for over 2 decades. I mean, and I live with scorpions, and I interact with them every day, and, you know, I clean their enclosures, and I take them to shows. I mean, if these things were as deadly as people thought, well, first of all, there would have been some fatalities in the last 20 years, and I certainly would have been in trouble a long time ago. And I tell people these things. These animals aren't as dangerous as people think. And again, with them, you know, not always wanting to use their venom.
You mention on your website as well the sort of the idea that probably the biggest sociocultural reason that scorpions don't get much respect is that they're not a warm and fuzzy kind of creature. And there's a picture. I don't know if that's you in the picture holding the scorpion.
Yeah, that's me.
That's you. Okay. It's really great to see that. It reminds me of the scene in Sharkwater where you see Rob, the protagonist in the film, who's out to make this documentary about sharks. At one point, very early in the film, you see him sort of hugging a shark. He's snorkeling, and a shark comes up to him, and he sort of holds the shark in his arms, and it's a very strange moment because you're not supposed to hug sharks, and you're probably not supposed to hold scorpions either. But again, it sort of it speaks to the fact that they're not as dangerous as they seem. And maybe the irony of this whole thing is that scorpions are actually more endangered by us than we are of them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people kill literally millions of scorpions every year. We kill them for food industries in parts of the world. They get killed by direct persecution. I mean, if someone goes out to the desert or a rainforest and they see a scorpion, a lot of times the scorpion is just going to get a boot taken to it. Mm-hmm. They're killed for the tourist trade. There's a lot of products. And these are things all that you can find all across Ontario. So I'm talking about what happens is scorpions are being captured from their natural habitat, killed, you know, thousands of miles away, and then they end up in stores all over the world in keychains and glass ornaments and candy and necklaces. And the products that they end up in almost seem endless. So, I mean, through our exploitation and our persecution and all these things, we kill millions of scorpions every year. And like I said, no one has been killed by a scorpion in North America in over 2 decades, so I think they have much more to fear from us than us from them. And the other thing is, a scorpion is just an animal, right? It's just trying to survive, like all animals do. They want to survive, they want to breed so they can ensure the continuation of their species. We kill scorpions for what? Out of ignorance, for greed, to make money off of, so they definitely have way more to fear from us than us them. And scorpions actually do a lot of good things for people, which we don't realize. Their venom is being used in medical industries now to create treatment for brain cancer and to make new antibiotics. I mean, these are horrific diseases that affect a lot of people. And so one day someone that says, you know, might have said, I hate scorpions, could unfortunately end up with cancer, or a loved one could end up with it, and it's going to be medicine from scorpions that save them. So, I mean, that says a lot right there, that these animals do a lot of good things for us, and they're bioindicators, just like a lot of people know that about frogs. If there's no frogs in a wetland, it's a good indication that that wetland has been severely degraded. Well, same with desert habitats. If no scorpions turn up in a habitat that should support them, it's a pretty good indication that that habitat's been severely degraded. So they're beneficial to us and saving lives. They're beneficial to the environment. They play complex roles of both predators and prey in the ecosystems, so they're valuable to the entire network of life. So these animals are very valuable on many different levels, but yet people would be so quick to either say I hate them, and others would be quick to exploit them and kill them for money or out of fear and things like that. So my objective is to hopefully debunk some of these myths and misconceptions about them and inspire empathy for these little guys.
I'd really like to talk more about the sort of environmental problems that scorpions face, and to get maybe a bit more into detail about some of the ways that scorpions are exploited, specifically in things like movies. And I was absolutely shocked to learn that scorpions are also eaten in some preparations and some ways in different parts of the world. I'd like to talk a bit more about that. We need to take a very short break to do a station ID, and we can come back with you after that, if that's okay.
All right. Sounds good.
Great. So we are talking with Matt Ellerbeck today. Matt Ellerbeck is a scorpion conservationist, a conservation educator, and an arachnoculturist. And today we are talking on Animal Voices about scorpions. Please stay tuned. Welcome back to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. Today we are speaking with Matt Ellerbeck. Matt Ellerbeck is a scorpion conservationist and an arachnoculturist. And just before the break, we were talking a little bit about why maybe scorpions should be more afraid of us than we are of them. And one of the things that may seem like maybe sort of an indirect problem, probably a direct problem caused by humans, are some of the environmental problems that scorpions faced. I was unfortunately not surprised to see something like traffic mortality on your list of environmental problems, Matt.
No, certainly not. And I mean, that's a problem that affects all sorts of animals from all over the world. I mean, anytime you have habitat, you usually have a road or highway running through it. With deserts, that certainly happens down there as well. So that's a problem that a lot of animals face. But when you see something like a scorpion, I think a lot of people, if they did see one on the road, they wouldn't be very empathetic to stop and let it cross. So a lot of people will probably purposely swerve to hit them and kill them. And that's if they see them at all. Because a lot of people, again, because it's not an animal you would think about. I mean, if someone was driving along a residential area and they thought there was a lot of cats, they might be on the lookout for them to make sure they don't hit them because it's something cute, cuddly, and appealing. But people really aren't going to show probably much concern about scorpions.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned also, as part of the sort of umbrella problem of habitat fragmentation and habitat loss, you mentioned urbanization and sort of this idea that scorpions are now, with sort of increased urbanization, scorpions are not through their own choice being forced to live alongside humans. And it sort of reminds me of an animal like raccoons, who have, through urbanization, been also forced to live among humans and have sort of adapted. Do you know of any ways that scorpions have sort of adapted with this sort of encroachment on their habitat?
Well, again, like raccoons, the main difference between the raccoons and the scorpions is the scorpions are a lot smaller.
Right.
So they can actually end up in people's homes or in their garages or around the home. You know, you have a rock garden or you have debris laying around or wood piles. All these things seem attractive to scorpions. At the beginning, I said, you know, these animals are very shy. They like to spend a lot of their time undercover, under debris, places to hide. So when their natural habitats are destroyed and suddenly, you know, a house is put up or a garage and, you know, there's various places around the home that might look like an attractive place to hide, scorpions then, by no choice of their own, move in to try to find a good place to hide. And the other thing is, where there's people, there tends to be, you know, because of our waste and things, it attracts insects, which then, of course, attracts scorpions again because that's their prey. So their habitats are destroyed, and then suddenly they have new forms of hides with prey around. So this becomes a very appealing place for the scorpion. Unfortunately, when people do find them, they usually just kill them, which is unfortunate because first the animals are losing their homes, and then by no choice of their own, they have to sort of relocate to less desirable places, and then they're just killed. So it's a bad situation for them all the way around.
I definitely need to thank you for the website, because I learned so much from it, and I'm someone who's been looking at animal issues for quite a while now, and even just, I'll read a small quote, and even just this passage really just open my eyes to something. You mention, quote, "Currently there are no laws in the United States that protect invertebrates from cruelty, abuse, or death. This means that scorpions are extremely vulnerable to human exploitation." And it's interesting that you mention that there are no laws about it, because I think probably we just assume that invertebrates or other insects are incapable of pain, or you know, they don't need to be protected in the same way. Could you tell us a little bit about how, if and how, scorpions experience pain and how sort of acts of cruelty might manifest themselves in that way?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, a lot of people, I hear that all the time, bugs don't feel pain. People still say that about fish sometimes. And the fact of the matter is pain comes from the sense of touch, right? Scorpions definitely feel things when they touch them. If I touch one in my tank or at a show, they will react. They feel sensations. They can sense pain. Now, I can't say exactly for sure. No one really knows how an invertebrate perceives pain to how we do, but it is definite that they do experience the sense of touch. And when something tries to harm them, or they have a sort of a perception of being where they could be in danger, they definitely react. They try to get away, or they'll, if they're cornered, they'll posture and put up their tail and their claws and react. So they definitely do react to these things. So, and that's why a lot of people would say, oh, they don't feel pain, or they're just a bunch of stupid bugs, but they don't care, or, you know, all these misconceptions that people have about invertebrates and why they don't need protection. But that's not true. If these animals didn't feel pain or concern, they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't try to get away, but they do. If they feel under threat, they, you know, they try to protect themselves. They know that they're being harmed, or they're, you know, they're facing something that's going to be hazardous to them. So, and so that right there tells people that it does matter. But despite that fact, they are exploited in all sorts of ways. I mean, even now with things like YouTube, you can find a plethora of videos where people, like, you know, dog fighting or cock fighting. They now have scorpion fights where two people will get scorpions and antagonize them to fight with each other, or fight with tarantulas, or fight with mice. And I was doing a display somewhere, and some guy had just come back. He was in the military and posted overseas, and he said him and his buddies used to always find scorpions and solifuges, which are camel spiders, and get all these things to fight. And I think that's awful that, first of all, you're capturing an animal from its home and then antagonizing it to get sort of a more confrontational reaction until the two things are fighting, and the end result is either a severely injured or dead animal. And then people put these videos up on the internet, and then other people see them and they think it's cool, so then they try to make their own copycat videos. And so,
one of the things you mentioned on your site as well that reminded me instantly of things that I had seen as well, was that scorpions are often used as props in movies and shows. And I can't remember the exact movie, but I can very clearly see in my head the image of a car tire running over a scorpion. And the question that popped into my mind when I read that was, is this an industry? Like, are scorpions bred for these types of things, or are they captured? Like, how does this sort of how does the use of scorpions in these various forms of entertainment happen?
It happens both ways. I was writing a letter of protest to a company who was using scorpions in necklaces and computer mice, even, and lights, and all these different things that had dead scorpions and glass ornaments on them. And their response was, all our scorpions are farmed. And my response back was, you know, that does little to alleviate my concerns, because you're still breeding animals just so you can kill them and exploit them for monetary value. It would be too easy to turn around and just make products with scorpion designs on them. So in movies and TVs, they could be bred in captivity, or a lot of the cases they are probably harvested directly from the wild. So if they are wild caught, despite the fact that they're being exploited, which is an issue, they're also sort of causing unnatural decline to the wild populations, which are bad. And if they are bred in captivity, at least it's not harming the natural population, which I will give them that. But again, you know, I can't get my head around the whole point of raising and breeding an animal just so you can turn around and exploit it or kill it or use it in the TV. I seen a TV show once where they were talking about, it was sort of a spoof, but it was supposed to be like a wildlife expert coming in and talking about how deadly scorpions were, and they lifted up this box and it was full of them, and because it was a spoof, the guy didn't actually know that much about scorpions, or you can tell he wasn't comfortable, so he was shaking the box because one was hanging on and the scorpion was falling on the floor, and they were banging into each other and being roughly handled and boshed around. And I've seen the same thing on Fear Factor, which I don't even know is on anymore, but I remember they would throw people in crates of snakes and scorpions and things, and the people would freak out and flail around and bosh these animals around and bang them off the walls and just all sorts of horrible things like that. But again, because these animals have very few advocates, I don't really know anyone who's a scorpion conservationist besides myself. You know, people don't say anything and they tolerate it, and probably most people don't even think about it. So that's, I just want, you know, my objective is to at least shine a little bit of light on this cause and let people know that, you know, at the end of the day, these are animals just like any other. They breathe, they can feel, they just want to survive, and they don't deserve to be treated so badly. It's the things that we do to them, between killing them for tacky tourist attractions and using them in movies and eating them and destroying their habitat. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. It's just something I want to hopefully try to stop.
You've done quite a bit of research into scorpions, obviously, and you talk about you mention a couple of books or journal articles that talk about scorpions having small litter sizes, very long generation times, and low survival rates, sort of a very low rate of population increase for many of the species. Makes it hard for them to sort of rebound from things like human exploitation. And there is the CITES convention. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about CITES and what CITES has to say about scorpions. Or at least
well,
some scorpions.
CITES is the Convention on the International Trade in Endangered Species, and it's supposed to regulate the trade and export and import of animals in a way that will hopefully not cause any population decreases in a manageable way, I think, is what they're trying to do. The only scorpions listed is, I'll give you the common name, is the emperor scorpion, which is the one that you see commonly in movies. It's the big black one, and they're quite common in the pet trade now. So they are listed under CITES, but they're under a CITES appendix, which it doesn't really regulate the trade, so you don't have to have any permits or special permission, I believe, to export or import emperor scorpions. It's just sort of, it's like when an animal is designated as special concerned. It's not quite an endangered species or a threatened species yet, but they're sort of monitoring it to make sure it doesn't end up like that. So that's what's sort of happening with the emperor scorpion under CITES. Their trade, you don't have to have that permits around it or anything, but it is sort of being monitored to make sure it hopefully stays in a manageable way. And the good thing about the emperor scorpion is a lot of them are being bred in captivity, and this is for the pet trade. So that way, if people are wanting to go out and buy something, they're hopefully not getting something that was harvested from the wild. And I think that does go a long way. Certainly, you know, people that might have an interest in animals, you know, they might want to have one. They're not really intentionally trying to do harm. So hopefully, if that's what they're trying to do, they'll at least get a pet that was bred in captivity and not being taken out of the wild.
And is that something you would support, is sort of keeping scorpions as pets?
That is a real, I kind of go back and forth on this issue. It's a big question, and my opinion, it has pros and cons. The one thing I do like about the idea of keeping sometimes snakes and scorpions as pets is that through that and through interactions, people can sometimes get over that fear. Like even, you know, I've known people that have had pet snakes, and then their families or friends will come over and they don't like them at first, and then they see people interacting with each other, and that sort of makes them think differently. And when you're talking about these animals where most of the issues they face is sort of based around the fact that everyone hates them,
right.
That can be a really positive tool. It sort of gets people more empathetic for them, so it does work on that level. I wouldn't be maybe necessarily completely opposed to it, but I wish the pet trade was regulated a little better. I do find it a little bit disturbing that anyone can walk in a pet store and just buy an animal and that's it.
Right.
And the sad reality is most people that buy exotic pets buy them on a whim, and they have no idea about how to properly take care of them, and most pet store people don't know how either. In fact, a friend of mine who is quite passionate about animals worked in a pet store, and he got let go eventually, I think, because he was telling people, you know, don't get this if that's what you want in an animal, and yada, yada, yada.
Right.
When the pet store's main concern is to make a sale. So it's beneficial to pet stores, I think, to have staff that aren't very knowledgeable about these things. And when I go into pet stores, I see rainforest scorpions that are kept in desert terrariums. So they really have no idea. So I wish that people who want pets of any kind would realize just how much of a big responsibility they were getting into. I mean, you're going to be responsible for the life of another creature. It's like becoming a parent, I think,
right.
In a lot of ways. And people just don't see it that way. And they get animals, and they get neglected. You know, on the one hand, it is good that people have a chance to interact with some of these animals, because it does, you know, sort of spell fear. But at the same time, I wish it was regulated a little better. So I kind of have mixed feelings about that.
And you keep some scorpions, and you do educational presentations. I was wondering if you could walk us through a typical presentation that you might do for... Yeah. Do you usually do presentations like for kids, or is it in high
it's
school?
It's for all ages, all walks of life. So it's really weird. One day I'll be doing like a naturalist meeting where you have a lot of... It will be all adults who sort of have more of a background, a knowledge about nature and the environment and things like that. And then maybe the next week I'll be doing a birthday party for a bunch of kids. So... Which I like, because I think that my message, I want to get it out to people of all walks of life and all ages, and I think all people can relate to that. So a typical presentation, the crowd, and sometimes it's mixed. If I do a public display, you don't know who's going to show up. So, but a typical presentation, I would come and I would give an intro, and then immediately I would bring the scorpions around for people to see, and they're in little glass terrariums. And I tell people, we're not going to handle them, because number one, you know, it could scare the scorpion and stress them, and I don't want to put them through that. And plus, you know, if they were like that, they might sting or pinch someone. So I tell people, I don't want you guys to be uncomfortable or get hurt, and I don't want the scorpions to have that either. And then I'll bring them around and have everyone look at them. And why I do that, I sort of go through some of the stuff that we talked about today. I tell them, first off, we don't have to be scared of these animals. They're very shy. They don't look for confrontation. They won't use their venom if they don't have to. You know, if you leave them alone and use common sense, you'll never have a confrontation with one, and go through all that and elaborate on it. Hopefully they'll see that scorpions aren't the monsters that movies make them out to be. After they know that, I like to tell them about why scorpions are in trouble. Their habitats are destroyed. They're forced into urban environments. They face persecution and exploitation through us, and let them know about the issues of why, you know, scorpion conservation matters. Then after that, I'll tell them about why it should matter to people. Like I said before, scorpion venom is used in medical industry, so they're helping to save lives. They're natural pest controllers. They feed on a lot of insects and smaller invertebrates. They're bioindicators. They're valuable components to the environment. So this is why they should be protected. They are valuable. They do many important things. And then at the end, I'll give out a fact sheet, and it tells them a little bit about what's going on, and link back to my website. Hopefully they'll learn more and become little scorpion ambassadors themselves. Spread the message, let other people know, and learn about how they can help. And so that would be a typical presentation. And through the whole time, I would bring out various scorpions and let them see them. And I'll take off the lid of the little terrarium and show them that if I have like a little plastic stick that I can use to herd the scorpions around. And if I tap one, they'll see it react, but I show them that it doesn't run over and try to grab the stick and sting it or climb out and attack me, and show them that they're really not aggressive at all. They can be defensive, but that's only because, you know, if they're scared or they think they're going to be harmed, they can be defensive, but they're not aggressive. And I think in some, like, keeping animals in captivity is, you know, there's a lot of different opinions on it, but I think in this case, it really is necessary. If I go and talk about scorpions with a bunch of diagrams and things, it's not the same as people seeing me interact with the actual animal and showing them, see, it's not aggressive, it's not trying to hurt me, it's not this monster that movies and TV have made it out to be. And hopefully after they see that, this is just a normal animal like every other that's just trying to survive in a world that's being increasingly monopolized by people, hopefully I can inspire them and break down some myths. And at the end of that show, I hope people leave feeling a little bit differently about scorpions. And for the ones that do come, because sometimes I get asked, do you think you're preaching to the converted? For the people that already have an interest in these things, I hope at the end of it, they want to become active. I want them to take that interest and become inspired and impassioned and want to do more. So if they come and they think, yeah, scorpions are cool, they're really interesting, they're fascinating, I want them to leave with, these animals are really cool, but they're in trouble, and I really want to do something to help them.
Maybe that is a good way to start to wrap up. We've only got about a minute left, and I'd really like it if you could give our listeners your website address and maybe a little bit of a plug for Creatures 101, because it's not just scorpions that are featured on that website. There's lots of other maligned animals that are included there, and would love for our listeners to have that resource. So if you could plug the website, that would be great.
So the easiest way to find my website is just to simply Google Scorpion Conservation 101, and it's the top result. And from there, you can learn a whole bunch more about scorpions and how you can help and hopefully want to become active. And from my website, you can link at the bottom to the Creatures 101 website. And Creatures 101 is sort of a cooperative of myself and two other conservationists that talk about snakes and turtles and amphibians. And like I said, the whole mantra of Creatures 101 has been standing up for the misunderstood creatures of the world. So hopefully people will want to learn about scorpions and then go to Creatures 101 and learn about snakes and turtles and all sorts of animals. And, you know, there's a lot of parallels with endangered species and things. A lot of the issues that affect one animal affect them all. Like, habitat loss really does affect all animals. I mean, if you take an animal's home away, it doesn't have much of a chance. So.
Matt, thank you so much for being on the program.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me and just giving me a chance to get the word out.
Not a problem. Take care.
Thanks a lot.
You were just listening to an interview with Matt Ellerbeck. Matt Ellerbeck is a scorpion conservationist and an arachnoculturist, and we were talking today about scorpions. You've been listening to Animal Voices. My name is Karl Ozhovsky, and that is it for today's program. If you have any questions or comments about today's program or any of our other programs, please do drop us a line at animalvoices@gmail.com, or go to our website. There's lots of information there, and maybe you can have an answer to your question without having to ask. That would be great, too. The website is www.animalvoices.ca. There's lots of shows there. Keep listening. Stay tuned for Dos Mundos.